Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight, we have two films to talk about. One is a documentary. And the other is a short film, part of the Black Mirror series. But first, let's talk docs. Specifically, the documentary Tickled.
How do you win a competitive tickling competition?
It is amazing. Brother Jay, thoughts?
Like, what is the scoring system?
Okay, so within a minute of starting this documentary, I already knew from start to finish what was going on.
Did you realize how dark it was going to get?
You couldn't know it was going to stumble into, like, True Detective kind of shit.
I knew pretty quickly that it was all a ruse for some guy's, some weird eccentric gay dude porn fetish.
Okay, but that's not where the story ends. I mean, that story would be interesting enough, but that's not the fascinating part of the story. Well, I guess that was the initial fascinating part of the story. So let's just dive in. Well, okay, actually, I guess we'll do our normal routine. Brother Jay, what was your initial thoughts?
Why the fuck am I watching this?
Oh, perfect. Did you find it an enjoyable experience?
No.
Okay. Drew, what was your initial thoughts?
I've mentioned a few times on the podcast that this year I'm trying to keep up with my viewing habits and record them on Letterboxd. I think I'm doing pretty good. I don't think I've missed any. There are two movies this year that I've watched twice. One was Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes.
Which is a masterpiece. The other is Tickled. Because I watched it in one sitting, maybe two sittings, but way quicker than I anticipated. And then I turned around and I made my wife watch it with me.
Yes, yes. That's exactly the experience. Although I didn't have Kelly watch it with me, but she's going to watch it. Because immediately I had to talk to somebody about it. I mean, that's why we put it on the calendar. Because even though it was a punishment for Jason, not on purpose, but this movie, I find fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, the weird fetish video thing is, I think, the least...
Squeaky toy.
Yeah, squeaky toy. Sorry, Eric.
I'll leave it in.
Is the least fascinating thing about this movie, I think. It's just like all of the money behind it.
Exactly.
Is wild. The tickle cells...
Yes.
What the heck? This my wife and I had the same thoughts when we were watching it. It really does feel like some of that dark True Detective shit where just like people with money can get away with doing really weird shit and have no consequences.
Like all good documentaries, I think, it took a turn. Like, you went in a certain direction.
It didn't take a turn. It was entirely predictable. So, I guess maybe... since you both exist in the heteronormal world, this is neither shocking nor foreign to me.
No, I mean, like, weird fetish videos, we don't have to get too far into it, but it's like, they exist, we knew that. I mean, the thing about, well, okay, so Let's.
Hey, I've seen real sex on HBO.
Exactly. So
I know the score.
Well, I don't know. Should we talk about the movie itself before we talk about, like, I don't know. Okay.
There's not a lot.
This movie is about a guy, a New Zealand television reporter named David Ferrier, right? He writes, like, pop culture stories and odd stories. He's a quirky guy. He is a lightweight, okay?
I found him to be very funny.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially in the beginning as he was introducing it.
Exactly. Well, because this is a story that should never have gone anywhere. He saw an ad or a video or something about this competitive endurance tickling sport. And immediately he's like, well, this is really weird. And it consisted of young athletic men, one of whom is restrained and then is tickled by one or more others.
Yeah, it's gay.
Oh, totally gay. Well, and that's he sends an email to Jane O'Brien Media, who's the company that's producing this and having, like, casting calls for.
By the way, Jane O'Brien also sounds gay.
Well, so he calls Jane, or he sends an email to Jane O'Brien and doesn't get any response for a couple days. But then gets a response saying that he just says he wants to, like, have an interview and do a story on their company. And Jane O'Brien Media says, we understand that you're a homosexual journalist, and we don't want our company associated with your views or any of your, you know, your homosexual ways, because we are very heterosexual, which is hilarious for two reasons.
That's the red flag right there.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And he says it so eloquently in the movie. He's like,
"Methink thou doth protest too much."
Yeah, but he says, you know, that's weird enough. But looking at the videos, they do look a little gay. So, like, I don't understand.
A little?
Yeah. Oh, no, they're super gay.
Yes. They're like the rainbows and unicorns and shit. And I'm a big fag, so I know gay.
Sure. So he writes, like, a little piece about it, blogged about it, actually, about this whole incident. He's like, hey, a funny thing happened. And then he starts getting, like, threatening emails and, like, really, like, threatening and bullying in-person visits by people from Jane O'Brien Media.
Fly all the way to New Zealand.
Yeah, they fly to New Zealand to confront him about not doing the documentary, about, you know, be careful because, you know, we will sue you into the ground. Which, by the way, is actually a pretty valid threat. I mean, if you have a lot of money, you can literally sue someone into poverty, even if they're right and you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems a reasonable threat, but he's going to continue with this documentary and, you know, and now with even more motivation pervert. Because it's just so, yeah, it's just so weird. Like, why this hugely disproportionate response, right? And then he does some digging. And like I said, this is where it's okay. It's not surprising that he finds out that Jane O'Brien Media and the female attorney who sends him the correspondence, the cease and desist stuff, whatever, they turn out to be just a Julian Assange type misdirection, all for this guy who turns out to be named David D'Amato. Now, one reason I don't fear about talking about David D'Amato being the bad guy in this is because he actually died. So, he is no longer alive to sue us.
Oh, well.
The filmmaker was...
So
was
the story has a happy ending.
Well, the filmmakers actually expressed their profound sadness that he passed away shortly after he made an appearance at a film festival, or sorry, the premiere, right, of their movie.
Jason, did you watch The Tickle King? The YouTube follow-up?
Oh, no, I didn't.
It's only 20 minutes. It's worth it.
I forgot that piece. I was so... what's the word? I was so angry that I wanted my time back that I was done.
Here's where we don't have to necessarily talk more about the plot, I just want to get into subjects that I wanted to talk to somebody about. So
there's not a lot of plot. So
some kind of intrigue because he ends up sort of he tries to turn the tables on this guy who's being very secret and threatening, And so they fly to Los Angeles, and then they fly to New York, right? Or to somewhere on the East Coast.
It was New York.
Yeah, it was New York, yeah. Because it turns out, this David D'Amato guy is rich and is like the son of a famous lawyer or whatever, and also has some disturbing things in his past. Like, he's got, he's you know, done stuff like, what, shut down a university computer system and is very, very threatening and bullying.
He did time.
Yeah, he did time. Yes, federal time.
Yeah.
But, okay, so, but let's step back for a second. First of all, so we live in the days where three guys who aren't in the same house, one of whom is not in the same state, can sit and talk about shit and broadcast on the internet to literally dozens of people. So, I mean, in this day and age, this kind of porn stuff seems pretty easy. Like, in the age of, like, cam girls and all this stuff, where if you want to, you can be a porn star no matter what you look like, because there's a fetish for everything. You just have to be the one, like, you have to, you know, you have to pick your spots, you know? If you, it's like the ASMR videos, or the videos where, like, Japanese women eat food, and that's all they do is just eat food in front of the camera.
Cake farts.
Yeah, oh yeah, there's all sorts of, like, you know, I don't want to yuck anybody's yums, but there's all sorts of, like, crazy, like, behavior out there, and there's somebody who likes it, right? All of this seems like a very harmless, very money-making opportunity for sure.
Okay, but in this day and age, who thinks this is harmless? That's the first premise.
But that's the thing, is that, so if everybody's an adult and everybody wants to, you know, if you want to earn a couple extra bucks by appearing in a video where you tickle somebody, like, it's not sex, it's not pornography, whatever. You know, that might seem like a good thing to do if you're in college or college age.
Anytime you lend your likeness and you sign anything, or you're engaged in any kind of, God forbid, I call it oral contract, verbal contract, I guess is a better term. If you are under age or dumb and engage in such activity, like, that's like that should be a red flag to begin with.
Of course, you and I know this. Even Drew knows this.
Even Drew. Yeah.
Yeah, no. All three of us old men know this. The problem is, when you're 18 to 23 and a guy, you're already by definition kind of stupid.
Okay, hang on. Wait, back the truck up. When I was 18, I already knew people like this. I already knew to avoid people like this.
Of course.
And that's my orbit versus your orbit.
Perhaps, yes.
So I'm not trying to elevate myself or say I'm any better. I'm just saying, like, as the reality of growing up and coming out and being the queer, like, this predator is somebody that, like, I recognized him instantly. Like, even before I knew it was really a dude, even though I knew it was a dude before I knew it was a dude. I'm like, that's a dude. This is totally a dude thing. The whole behavior and aggression is dude.
Okay, but see, that's I guess my naivete. That I at first I thought this was just a magical world where if you have enough money, you can satisfy your weird kinks and everybody comes out happy. Right? I mean,
oh no, this is abusive.
You hide it from your family because you don't want your family to know you're a freak. But again, I'd never occurred to me that this was also going to be a huge power thing, where now have all these guys on tape, and now if they stop giving you what you want, you can threaten them with ruining their lives and make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And revel in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the really sick part. I mean, if that's your kink, if tickle videos are your thing, fine. But yeah, then he really got off on humiliating and destroying these young men that didn't toe the line.
Yeah, the tickling was only a vehicle, and I suspect he picked that as a vehicle because it could easily be explained, although very thinly.
Oh, you as had to have a tickle thing.
Not necessarily. No, I don't think so. I mean, he may have, but it wouldn't have been necessary for him to. This was more about the power.
he would have branched out into other fetishes or something if after his first tickling adventure, right? After he went to jail?
I don't think so, because he had this perfected. He had this down to an art. So, because the average person won't strain credulity to push past that it's not innocent. They will just absorb that, oh, no, that's innocent. Well, who would possibly pervert that? Well, let me introduce him. He's called Pedo Bear.
I don't know Pedo Bear.
You don't know who Pedo Bear is?
I don't know who Pedo Bear is.
Okay, well, we'll
never heard of Pedo Bear.
Good Lord. Let's put a pin in that. We'll come back to that.
Okay. Well, anyway, like the reason why I found this fascinating is, like I said, on one hand, we live in a time where anything, any kink you have, you can put it into just a regular search engine. I'm not even talking like a porn search engine, but certainly there too. Where, yeah, if you want to see heavy set amputees sit on cakes, I'm sure you can make that happen. And I'm sure it's out there already. And if not, you can, you know, there again, it's funny because in my very liberal acquaintances online, you know, sometimes like ultra feminist type people are also like very like sex positive as far as like prostitution, like sex for money, like sex work. Sex work shouldn't be illegal, right? Except that the problem is sex work is surrounded by things that are illegal. And just like this isn't even sex work. These guys are not doing anything pornographic except in the eye of the person that buys the video to masturbate to.
That doesn't make it pornographic, though.
That's the question. But the thing is, Mr. D'Amato can send them an email saying, oh, yeah, we know your real name and we can find your family and we can send lawyers out there and we can put websites under your name where, you know, we show videos of you doing these things and we'll characterize it as pornographic. We'll call you a gay porn star. We will get you kicked out of your college or kicked off of coaching a team of young men because you have this in your past just to fuck with you. Just as a power play.
Yeah, that was the truly horrific part of this.
And yeah, the satisfying part of the documentary is it seems, and actually since the guy is dead, it seems to work. You know, it seems like this farrier guy managed to outbully him, or actually he didn't outbully him. He just sort of judoed the bullying and laid it all out there, like shone a light on it. And all the other people in his orbit, like the lawyers and that weird heavyset guy, and mm-hmm. maybe he's a lawyer too, and like the tickle cell people, like he had different cities where he would hire people to then do auditions for tickling videos. And then they would film the auditions, and that itself would be clips for sale or clips to be used to blackmail against you or whatever. And they would offer people lots of money and these people.
They would target, you know, ultra poor communities that had no economy.
Yes. Yes. Nothing is sadder than the Detroit tickle cell.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not a drug dealer, like what, you know, if somebody offers you $1,000 to make a video at a hotel room, it may be a little weird, but you know, you're never naked, you know,
right?
Just like wrestling, you're already a vulnerable population because now you can be controlled by money. And I'm sure this happens on like on a hetero scale all the time. Again, it's the sex work thing where it's not if you have an adult who wants to trade sex with another adult and there's money involved, then it's not really any business of mine, I don't think. The problem is all the other stuff around it is usually really criminal and ugly and involves like trafficking and stuff too. And, you know, that's no bueno. But this was possibly the most fun sex trafficking documentary I've ever seen. I mean, you know, again, it has some tense and evil moments in there. But yeah, I don't know. I'm surprised that you didn't find this at all enjoyable, Jason.
I didn't find it enjoyable because this is not a foreign experience to me. This is part of my community. Not a good part, by the way. but this is the reality that exists in the subculture in the dark, craggy recesses of the tar pit that is the lower end of the community.
Well, but there's plenty of this going on in the hetero community too.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it's a lot easier to get help in the hetero community when you take things like this to the police. And that's changing now, but 25, 30 years ago, if you would have taken something like this to the police, they wouldn't have touched it most sure. cases.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as we discussed in Milk, you know, this is, again, a vulnerable population because they're not going to ask for help.
Which is why he preyed upon them.
Yeah.
Did you think David Ferrier and his buddy Dylan were like an alternate reality version of like Simon Pegg and Nick Frost?
A little kinda, bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Here's a weird connection to Not in a Creepy Way.
Sorry. Spit on my microphone.
Some of the music used in the documentary was from Upstream Color, which is the second movie that the guy who wrote and directed and starred in Primer.
Primer.
Did. Yeah. Yeah. I've never seen it, but it's supposed to be an experience.
You've never seen... you've never seen the other one.
I've never seen like, Upstream.
You've seen Primer. Have Trust you, me.
I have not.
Okay. Yeah, it intrigues me, but I had a bad taste in my mouth after some like artsy movies for a while, so I think I shied away at that point. But anyway... the only, I mean, as far as like notes, again, I mean, I'm a little disappointed. And maybe our next movie we talk about is going to be equally disappointing. But
that's the one where I had the, what the fuck am I watching moment. Yeah.
Okay, well, so Drew, do you have, what are your, you kind of overtalked you, what are your thoughts on Tickled?
I thought this was a very entertaining documentary. It really did give me like creepy rich people can do anything vibes, and it reminded me of the kind of what they circle around in True Detective about how rich people, they just live in a completely different world than normal people.
Are we talking about True Detective like season 2 and 3? I don't remember it so much in 1.
Oh yeah, in 1, like the whole thing about the kids, right? And the evangelist with all the money who had political connections.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, it was all connected.
So, this is a dark underbelly with lots of tendrils. I know there's tendril porn out there. You can probably get that in every flavor.
Hentai.
It all has different Japanese names. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, and I thought there were also some unanswered questions in this movie.
Such as?
Like, was all of his money really just from his trust fund? Or was he monetizing these videos somehow?
He has to have been.
My guess is that because it was incorporated or the vehicle was somehow...
this is a German company, right?
Monetized in Germany. I would strongly suspect it's on a whole bunch of German pay websites. That would be my guess.
I'm sure you can find this guy's Tickle videos for money.
Yeah. I plus, you can monetize it on YouTube and other kind of websites that he was mirroring on pay for clicks and click-through. So,
yeah, that was one gap I thought was in this movie. It was like, yeah, it was weird. It was creepy. But like, what was really the industry here? Like, what was the revenue that he was?
The guy in Florida seemed to make plenty of money doing tickling videos. And he claimed to be a straight up pornographer.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was very upfront about it. That was a very straightforward business model. The pretending or maybe tricking heterosexual men into producing gay fetish videos. Like, what's the industry there? Like,
I guess maybe I didn't even think about that part of it. So do you think part of the thing was to that they had to be heterosexual?
In the queer community, that's like the golden chalice. That's like the that's like what everybody chases, the supposed straight guy that you can convert. That's like the holy grail. So that's like a desirable get.
So maybe that was his thing.
That was, you think that was David's thing?
Yeah. Maybe that was probably as much of a thing as the tickling part.
Probably also because if he was as closeted as purportedly he may have been, and again, I don't know. I'm just speculating. I read a book. And so... I was no, mocking a podcast.
That's so. A podcast, yes.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
My guess is that if he was truly that in denial about his homosexuality, the way that he would easily be able to justify that in his denial would be like, well, I'm a straight guy and this is a straight guy and we might do things together, but we're both still straight.
What a great segue.
Yeah, that's true. So
you, even if you didn't enjoy Tickle, Jason, the Tickle King is worth it.
Okay. No, I'll watch it.
It's real short.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I hated it, I guess. It's just that it was so familiar and I knew where it was coming. It was like watching a car wreck happen right in front of me, knowing exactly what was going to happen. And it was just frustrating because any of the answers that I really wanted, I knew I was never going to get.
Well, okay. So. One thing that strikes me too is that David D'Amato is basically Donald Trump, and all of his little minions and toadies are basically Donald Trump's minions and toadies and some of his family.
Yeah, yeah. They're just trying to intimidate till somebody backs down.
Yeah, and the Tickle King kind of points this out too. Available on YouTube.
They just say wild shit and keep saying it. Because they think if they keep saying it, eventually people will believe it.
And he really doubles down on that, like he was trying to tell the, because I guess David wasn't at that premiere. So it was just the other guy, the cameraman guy.
Right.
And
Dylan.
Yeah. And he was trying to convince Dylan that, man, you need to separate yourself from David. Because, you know, David's lifestyle is really
skeezy.
It's morally corrupt and it's going to bring you down. You don't want you're a family man. Why would you associate with this type of person?
Yeah.
And these guys show amazing restraint. I mean, that's how this thing works, is that you have to show amazing. And the fact that, like, for instance, they interview or they have a Q&A at the end of the movie. He watches the movie. At the end, they have a Q&A and he sits in the Q&A. And, you know, he's going to be there and be intimidating. But on the other hand, the cameraman guy who's leading the Q&A is like, I can do this too. I mean, let's just have the conversation. Like, I'm not intimidated by you, partly because I did the movie and now there's an audience full of people that enjoyed this movie who think you're a weirdo. But he's not, you know, and he's like, okay, you can try to intimidate me. You can try to tell me that my business partner is going to drag me down because of his homosexual ways. But since you're a weirdo anyway, I'm just going to be polite to you and say, no, that's fine. I disagree.
Another thing that this movie did is that it did make me appreciate the folks who are pretty good at the ambush journalism. Because David is not.
No.
He's pretty brave. But,
yes.
But he didn't really know what to do once he got there. Which is funny. I could relate.
Oh,
because I can imagine that, like, if I was ever in that situation, that's probably what I'd be like. Hey, I finally tracked you down. What's up?
Exactly. Yeah.
I think maybe the difference between American journalism and foreign journalism.
Maybe.
I don't think they were there. I mean, at a certain point, especially toward the end. They weren't there to show up to actually interview him. They were there to show up to put it in his face that he couldn't intimidate them. Because every time they went hard back against him, he backed down.
Well, I think they knew that they were trying to shake the tree.
Yeah.
So they weren't trying to get too much out of them. They were trying to rattle the cages so they could see how far up they could go.
Yeah, maybe. But like I said, every time they pushed hard back against him, he backed down. Which is maybe a lesson to learn about bullies. So we should teach our children, A, don't let people take pictures of you anywhere at any
not
time.
Not just pictures, video.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Video, yeah. Pictures, whatever. Audio, yeah. Recordings.
Your likeness is your likeness. Don't allow anyone to take it from you.
Also, if somebody bullies you, one good way to if you can't just remove yourself from the situation, is to just go hard back. Now, unfortunately, escalation is probably not something you want to do with somebody who's unhinged, so there's that. But, you know, bullies will find a weaker target, is what I'm saying.
My wife and I had a minor disagreement with some advice I gave my child about some playground shenanigans.
Okay.
My oldest, early on in first grade, in kindergarten, I guess, she was really obsessed with monkey bars and getting better at monkey bars. She told me that there was this older kid, this older girl, who... whenever she would be going across the monkey bars, this older girl would come the other way and make her drop. And if she didn't drop on her own, she would like kick my daughter until she dropped. And so she was very frustrated by this. And my advice to her was to give this girl 3 chances and tell her that if she kicks her again, it will be the last time, and the next time she will kick first, and tell her that 3 times, and if she still does it, then the next time she comes near you, you can kick her as hard as you can in the stomach.
Just in the hallway.
On the monkey bars.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought that was reasonable.
Sure, I don't, yeah.
My wife did not agree. I mean, she agreed with the theory behind it, but not the practice.
Well, the thing I told my youngest rental niece when she was in...
Your youngest what?
Rental niece.
Rental niece?
Well, not my niece by blood. Yeah, so anyway, my niece on the side...
That sounds very pejorative, so I wouldn't use that term.
Well, okay, anyway.
Especially in the context where we've just been talking about porn.
Well, no, this is not a porn conversation. Okay.
But, okay.
No, context. Right. I did not rental. She wasn't my rent girl.
That's
okay.
What I'm...
Okay, all right, I get it.
Jesus God.
Okay, you people are all one-track mind, let me tell you. David D'Amato has a point. Your lifestyle is going to drag us down.
Oh, well, it's too late for that.
What do you mean, you people?
In one case, this girl, like... wrapped a jump rope around her neck and was like choking her briefly, and I pulled this aside and I said, okay, here's what needs to happen. What you need to do, it's very simple, just be very matter of fact about it. You take a pencil and you sharpen it as sharp as you can get it, and you jam it in her eye. The thing is, all it takes is one kid with an eye patch that sends a message to the rest of the school that you are not to be trifled with. Now, luckily, she looked right back at me and just shook her head and said, Uncle Eric, and then walked away. And she knew I was mostly kidding. But I was only mostly kidding.
Mm-hmm.
I was in no way kidding.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. They think you're a soft target. Make them look for a different target.
Yeah.
Easy enough. I mean, again, everybody's getting suspended. You may go to a different school afterward when you have the knockdown, drag-out fight.
Yeah, yes, it's called McLaughlin.
Yeah, well, and this whole, I guess it falls under the category of internet catfishing, doing disreputable things for hire or the promise of money. Although at least David paid money. But if you're following the homicide trial in Anchorage, the Thunderbird Falls homicide, it just keeps getting weirder and weirder. I think I mentioned before that I thought the ringleader of the sex cult or whatever, I was surprised because she looked like a thumb. She doesn't look like a thumb. That was really mean of me. She looks like if the Muppet Beaker was a human woman with blonde hair. Still not who I would suggest, even of all the Muppets, to be the ringleader of the sex cult. Yeah, so it turns out they murdered this girl over the promise of $9 million from PayPal from this guy they had never met.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck? And again, kids are stupid. In some cases, these kids, I think, were, in the most part, developmentally disabled as well. But the guy in Indiana who put up the offer had this whole thing about $9 million, whatever. They talked to, because he comes from a town of like 600 people. And so they talked to people in his town, because this is a pretty juicy story. And like his he's only like 21. His high school classmates were like, well, we never think he's capable of killing somebody. But the child porn, oh yeah, we knew that was a problem. Like, what? Yeah. He was asking his friends with children for diaper changing videos and stuff. And he exchanged pictures of nude kids and videos of nude kids with these girls in Anchorage, Anchorage, the Valley, whatever. Yeah, so there's all these charges of child pornography there, and then homicide. I mean, they basically contracted a hit.
So if they're developmentally disabled or stunted, how is it that they had access to a firearm?
Oh, because they're also in one case is the crouch surf. Crouch surfing? That's not even a word. They were like couch surfing kids. Like they were, kids with troubled past, like runaways and stuff.
Oh, they were staying in rentals?
They were somebody's rental nieces and nephews.
Yeah. You're going to, that was a cute thing, but now you've made it ugly.
My work here is done.
All the alleged activities you can find. Now it's an international story.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's also what child porn, too.
Oh, yeah.
Federal charges. So.
Well, and of course, this thing we've had, there's a problem that exists because child porn, which I think we can all agree is bad. If you are a kid and you send a naked picture to your boyfriend or girlfriend or both, as a kid, if you send your own picture, like if you're 16 years old and you send a naked picture to your 16-year-old boyfriend or girlfriend, you guys both can go to jail for child porn, producing and distributing and possessing.
Yep.
And granted, if you are a stupid kid and you take stupid naked pictures of yourself and send them to your stupid friends and your stupid friends share them and then they become online and then you've got the fact that it lives online forever, that's one of the ways they can prosecute the child porn to such a high degree, is because they have actually found track down a lot of these kids who were they are adults now, but were kids in these videos that just will never go away online. So the idea is they get victimized every time somebody watches this video.
Now, I assume that the dude is going to get brought up on murder charges.
Already been arrested and will be extradited.
Good.
He's going to meet this beaker looking girl for the first time. Although I guess he's already seen her because they've traded videos. And I'm sure she was attractive in the way that she does things other girls won't. But still.
Like murder?
Yeah, apparently. Oh, my town. My town, my town, my town. So, Black Mirror. Have you guys watched a bunch of Black Mirror before getting this assignment?
No.
Okay. Jason, you had seen this already before?
I watched this in the hotel room in Auburn, Washington, the Thursday that I wasn't podcasting with you two.
So was this already on the calendar by that time?
No.
Okay, so you watched this of your own free will?
Yes. Well, of my free will, in as much as I was trapped in a hotel room with my boyfriend who said, you're going to watch this. So
is he a big Black Mirror fan?
Probably.
You guys haven't seen like Bandersnatch or any of the other seasons of Black Mirror?
No.
Bandersnatch is, do you know about Bandersnatch?
No.
Bandersnatch is it was going to be part of season 5, but it's sort of a standalone thing because it's a choose your own adventure interactive movie.
Oh, I've heard about it.
And it's a little meta, or it's a lot meta, but it's kind of fascinating. I kind of liked it. And there are lots of different endings. I mean, if you make choices. Anyway, I recommend Bandersnatch. It took me a while to actually get to it because I thought it was sort of gimmicky. I really like some of the episodes of Black Mirror, though. I think like the first season one, episode one about the politician was amazing. I thought the one with the Star Trek theme in, I think, season three, maybe, was very interesting. I think the one with the black and white with a robot dog, it's sort of scary, Twilight Zone-y. There's been some racial ones that I thought were okay, but just whatever. It's like Twilight Zone morality plays. They're all a little... The one with Bryce Dallas Howard about your social rating score is, I think, really fascinating. It's a great idea, but I think the episodes are a little long. I think an hour is a little bit longer than they needed to be. Even the longest Twilight Zone episodes were like 40 minutes. So, season 5, episode 1, Striking Vipers. Did you guys recognize these guys?
I knew Anthony Mackie,
who is Marvel's Falcon, and he's also been in The Fifth Estate, The Hurt Locker, and 2004's Manchurian Candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And then the co-star, second lead of Striking Vipers, is, and by the way, Anthony Mackie plays Danny Parker, and his friend is Carl, who's played by Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who is DC's Manta from Aquaman.
I haven't seen Aquaman, and this dude looked really familiar to me. I looked him up. I don't think I've seen anything else he's been in.
Nope, I was looking, and I haven't seen anything at all. He was good, though. I thought the performances were pretty great all around.
Yeah.
Jason. So, okay, and I know... I think I know where this is going, but let's just start again with our normal format. No,
do you?
Now, Brother Jay, what's your initial thought watching this?
Where do I begin? I was... it was a little offensive to me, so.
What about it offended you?
First of all, the fact that it portrayed the guys as having to figure out if it was the game or if it was them latently, and that the fact that they would have to kiss would have to result in a fight because there is no other way two males could actually discuss in a mature, rational manner things of importance. So that's offensive to me. That it always has to be violence. That the only way to solve anything is violence. So that's the first thing that really offends me.
They weren't rational, though. They were both in crisis over the situation.
And why was that a crisis situation? That's the other offensive thing. It's such a crisis. You're discovering possibly that you're not who you thought you were. That's a crisis? Why? What's wrong with finding out who you are?
Oh, it's totally a crisis. If you've built your whole foundation on thinking you're heterosexual and then all of a sudden you're not the person you
thought. That's a huge disservice to anybody who struggles.
Sure. Yeah, but it's not about people who struggle. This is not about that. Actually, I would argue that this is more a treatise on the nature of what is cheating.
Well, and so that's the other thing that I found that really kind of bothered me. It was bad enough. So porn is one thing, right? And so couples have to figure out what works for them with porn in their relationship and what kind of relationship they have with it, if any. There has to be some kind of agreement. But at the point that you're pushing that into reality beyond some kind of virtual reality, you know, the virtual reality is, you know, what it is. But once you put it to physicality, like that's, you know what, before you start that, you need to own up to what is going on and deal with the situation at hand. You have a wife and kids.
Yeah, that's the tension.
You do that before you go and find out.
Well,
you deal with it before.
Ideally.
No, but I'm, yes.
Drew, what's your initial thought after watching this? You said you had the what the fuck moment.
Yeah, I've never watched an episode of Black Mirror before. I understood it was sort of in the vein of Twilight Zone. So I expected there to be something. Some sort of twist. I did not expect what happened. I thought all the performances were good. Like, I thought it was a well-crafted, like, episode of TV. But it left me like really curious about what was the point? Like, what was this episode of TV trying to say? Was it about, like, closeted gay men? Was it about blurring the boundaries between reality and virtual reality and what that actually means? Was it a treatise on cheating? Like, what was it trying to say? What was it trying to explore? I had no idea. So I think it was a visually interesting failure of a science fiction show.
Wow.
The best Twilight Zone episodes, like, you know what the point is, right? Yeah. Even if you're surprised, but by the end, you know, as it's buttoned up, you're like, oh, that's what that was about. I have no idea what this was about. Like, what are the concepts that they're trying to shine a light on? Like, what are the things that they're trying to make us worried about?
Yeah. Okay. Well, again, I think this is a exploration of what is cheating. Although I think the end of it, and, like, I guess let's just put it out there. Here's the plot, is that we have a 27-year-old guy named Danny and his friend Carl, and, you know, they're bros and whatever, but their lives are kind of like diverging after college, right?
Yeah, they're currently at the beginning, they're roommates.
Yes. And then 11 years later, we've got Danny, who is now like a family man. And Carl is still like, or he's actually what, married and divorced, or maybe has been a serial monogamist and he's like between relationships, or actually can't remember when I guess he first shows up at the party alone, but
he's a playboy.
Yeah, he's a playboy. Exactly.
He's been, his career has been successful. I don't know doing what. But yeah, he is not settled down.
Yeah. And of course, Theo, which I have a hard time not saying that in Dr. Cosby accent. I'm not going to do it. So Theo, his wife, Danny's wife, and they have a 3-year-old child, and they have kind of fallen out of the contact with Carl, but Carl shows up at the birthday party. And here again, maybe I'm just bringing my own bags on this trip, but Danny's got some conflict because Danny is now grown up and he's all buttoned up.
And he's super bored of his life.
Yes. And maybe frustrated. So, and yeah, I mean, and he's getting older, you know, and in Carl, he sees his old friend who he probably doesn't have as much in common with anymore. And also maybe he's a little jealous of Carl's lifestyle, but he's the responsible guy. And Danny, he's not wanting for anything. He seems to be very successful also, judging only from his house and his availability of electronics.
Yeah, upper middle class.
Yeah.
But completely unsatisfied with life.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a very familiar, cliched setup.
Okay.
It's not bad. It's just...
Yeah.
This part of it is in no way original, and I think purposefully so.
Sure. And the Black Mirror introduction is this video game called Striking Vipers, which is a virtual reality game, but it's kind of based on those combat games like Mortal Kombat, like Tekken, that kind of stuff.
Karateka.
It's the same game they were playing back when they were roommates.
Exactly. But it's the...
Yeah.
The new
upgraded version is now virtual reality.
Yes. So instead of just doing the combination of moves that they know so well with the characters they know so well, and again, like, you know, there's a limited number of characters you can be. So, mm-hmm. You know, Danny had his favorite character, which is this Asian guy. And Carl had his this character, who was this girl. Was she Asian too? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, you know, and that happens in video games, right? There's no reason why you can't play a female character in a video game. But when you introduce the whole idea of virtual reality, then the idea is that now they can sort of inhabit these characters a little more fully. And they realize that they have the hots for the characters. So they end up like, what, it starts out with just a kiss, or they do it the first time? I can't remember exactly how it works, but...
No, it was a kiss.
That immediately Danny was like, oh, yeah, and like ended the game. And so, because again, it's like, oh, this turns out may be some gay shit, even though the virtual reality characters are doing heterosexual stuff. But it's threatening. And here's a question that I don't know the answer to, and I'm not capable of knowing the answer to, but is it harder to be a gay male if you're an African-American male?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So that's probably a source of tension as well.
Yeah.
Because you have a... Again, Danny has a whole host of roles he has to play in his life.
Yeah, I mean, it's threatening to these guys because up to this point in their life, they have not identified as gay men.
Not at all. And it turns out they enjoyed their experience so much and they're getting kind of addicted to it. So that's, you know, again, the video game addiction, porn addiction, that kind of stuff. So there's this whole progression where, you know, Carl wants to keep doing this and Danny's like, it's like he can't. He can't do it because it's like he's committing a sin or he's doing something that's wrong or he doesn't want to admit that he has these real feelings or whatever.
Or he's cheating on his wife.
Exactly. He's cheating on his wife. Exactly. So they end up having a big confrontation where they have to kiss. They decide, well, we just got to kiss it out. And that doesn't work. So they end up having a fight. And then they get arrested. And that's when Danny has to tell his wife, Theo, what the fuck has been going on?
Well, at one point, Danny broke it off for like a year.
Yes, right? Yeah. And Carl has been trying to get back in there. You know, he's like, oh, he needs it because it's the most satisfying thing. He has not been satisfied like that since.
Even when he had sex with a polar bear.
Exactly, yes.
Or as a polar bear? I forget. Was it with or as?
I'm not sure. Maybe both. Who knows?
Probably both.
Yeah, because it wasn't just being the virtual reality. He tried to have sex with other people in that game, but it wasn't as satisfying as with his friend.
That's because the penguins that were tying each other up and tickling one another.
Perhaps, yes. Penguins, they won't admit to that either. Source of tension. Okay, but here's where I had the question, but maybe this has already been blown out of the water because Drew's not buying it at all and Jason's just offended. But I thought that all of this tension I thought was really interesting. This whole idea of like what is cheating and like even the your role as a man, can you, you know, do this stuff with your best friend who's a guy, but it's like sex stuff, even though it's virtual, is it real? Blah blah blah. But the resolution to this movie, this short thing, is that Danny and his wife Theo come to an agreement where once a year on his birthday, I guess, he gets to play the video game with Carl and have lots of sexy time virtually. And she gets to go to a real bar and have real sex with a real stranger, which I think undercuts the message because that's a whole different thing. Like actually cheating on your partner with a stranger or even not brings in way more baggage, you'd think, than a virtual relationship. Although, again, they didn't explore that at all.
No, it's only...
Does it? Who knows?
It's you say virtual. It's not as if it were a computer-generated person on the other end. It was a real person that was just wearing a mask.
Exactly. Can you have... I mean, you're having a sexual relationship with somebody, but you're not in the same room.
That doesn't... But intent matters. So
is it a gay relationship if you're having virtual sex with someone's avatar in a heterosexual coupling?
No.
So you reject the notion, the very foundational notion that they were in any way gay?
Yes. And the reason I would say that is because if the two of them were themselves in the video game, it would have never happened.
Now, I can see that.
So that's why.
Also,
that's,
Carl's got another dimension to it. Carl is actually a woman in the video game. Like, he's actually getting penetrated.
And they switch at one point.
Do they switch? Oh, maybe. I don't know. But
I didn't think they did.
Yeah, I thought they did. I thought they remained the same characters. Oh. I don't know. I thought it was fascinating. I thought it was interesting. And I thought the end was a cop-out. But I like the whole setup. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting... again, it's a... It leads to a whole thing. It's like well, the whole nature of pornography too. If you watch pornography as a couple or as a single part of a couple, are you cheating on your other half? I don't know. It's a bigger question.
Well, that's a relationship boundary question. I think that's that depends that that that's dependent upon what the two of you agree upon.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like in this case, Carl and Danny were obviously becoming virtual reality sex addicts because it was affecting their lives. So they had a problem that had nothing to do with the sexy part of it or the homosexual part of it, but just the fact that they were changing their lives and hiding things from their family to do this illicit activity. Well,
also the fact they were doing this, you're married and you have kids. You know what? Take care of your marriage and your kids. If you want to get divorced and change your life, that's one thing. But do that and don't fuck up as many people's lives as you can in the meantime.
Ah, but that's not everybody's existence. I mean, you know, we've all had, Drew and I, luckily, knock on wood, have had long marriages. And our parents this day celebrated their 48th wedding anniversary. So, but that's kind of an aberration. That's an anomaly. That, you know, again, we're all outliers, you know. People cheat on each other all the time. Relationships break up, sometimes because of it.
Just because people are doing it doesn't mean you should lower your standards.
Of course not. No. But yeah, but this is not, none of these characters are aspirational. Theo's going to bring home chlamydia to Danny.
Except that he gets rewarded with what he wants.
No, but they both get rewarded with what they want.
They adapt to keep the marriage intact.
Yeah. For the sake of the kid. Again, it's all about keeping the family together. He's doing his
both
best.
Both kids.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And he's doing, I mean, again, he's taking care of his family. He's just found this hobby or interest on the side that's not harming anybody, sort of, until it does. And then you've got a problem. And then you have to face that problem. And sometimes you got to kiss and then hit your best friend.
Yeah. I mean, I thought this episode was a really interesting setup, and it raised, I think, a lot of interesting questions, but it really missed the boat in trying to resolve them. Or maybe that wasn't the intention to resolve any of them, but if not, I think that's cheating.
Yeah.
I think if you look into more Black Mirror episodes, you will find that ending in this kind of unsatisfying way is sort of a trend. Like, there are a lot of episodes that bring up things, but there's no tidy resolution to any of them. It's just they're basically made to make you think.
So you think that's a choice and not a incompetence?
I don't know. Sometimes you can mask one with the declaration of the other. I don't know. Maybe did they? I don't, because they left, I mean, they did that turn at the end on purpose. I mean, it's an actual turn, and it was a choice that was consciously made that they were going to say, okay, Danny's now said, okay, he's got an agreement with his wife that he can do this thing with Carl. At the same time, she takes off her wedding ring and goes to the bar and picks up a stranger. Like we established in the first shot of this movie when they sort of played the game that they were strangers in a bar, that she liked that. So each of them is fulfilling another's fantasy, each of them is allowing the other to fulfill their own fantasy.
Jason, you've recently watched a bunch of Twilight Zone episodes, right?
No.
Weren't you the one who was watching a bunch of, rewatching them?
We watched a few New Year's Eve because...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, because boyfriend Jesse had never seen the originals, and... He was a little tripped out on them because they were freaky and quite bizarre.
Yeah. So, Eric, have you watched any Twilight Zone episodes recently?
Sure. I think I'm familiar with a lot of them.
Am I being unfair with the comparison? Did Twilight Zone have similar unresolved questions in their episodes?
No, you're right. No, the Twilight Zone stories... were very tight. I mean, we're talking about Richard Matheson and Robert Block and Rod Serling. And I mean, these are guys who, I mean, and they also, except for the one season, they were all 30-minute episodes too. So they had a story to tell in a very short time. And they're all morality plays and they're all fairly cheesy. I mean, they're all now they're tropes, I guess, but I think even at the time, it wasn't like they were breaking new ground as far as the storytelling. It's just they were they were like using, I don't know, a lot of times they did the whole metaphor thing. Like Star Trek did. Like Star Trek had a lot of, you know, Star Trek had the original Star Trek, whatever it's called, the original series. Is that what the cool kids say?
Yes.
Yeah. So the original series of Star Trek, which I grew up with and I'm very fond of, although again, watching as an adult, you know, you had the Monster of the Week episodes, but then you had some really heavy social commentary, like the two guys that were black and white, except they were opposite sides. That's a little on the nose. The constant Klingons being Russians were, you know, that was also nothing like the Next Generation where we had, you know, Q and the Borg and all those things that, because I didn't watch the Next Generation every week. I just found myself watching it here and there, but I loved it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I developed opinions about characters and stuff the same way I did about X-Files that I didn't watch.
I was going to say, you just really liked Denise Crosby.
Who is Denise? Is she
Tasha Yar?
Tasha Yar.
Oh well, sure. Why not? Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's funny. Yeah. Hey, yeah, no, those are all very tight stories, though. Those were in the vein of like radio plays that definitely had a point of view, and they were going to only give you one lesson. They weren't going to give you six different angles to look at.
Yeah, that's what really left me cold about this episode was. It brought up a bunch of questions, but it didn't seem to have a point of view. And I think that's cheating. Because even if your point of view is bullshit, at least it's a point of view.
Would you have been more satisfied if, like, Carl committed suicide or one of their lives, like, or maybe Danny's marriage collapsed because of it or something? And that would be like, here's what you get when you cheat.
They rode off into the sunset on a unicorn.
Oh, there's that too. Maybe, yeah, he... abandon his family.
No, I don't. I mean, consequences would be fine, but you'd have to be clear about what their consequences for. Like I said before, is this an episode about cheating? Is this an episode about being closeted? Is this an episode about being too addicted to technology? I don't know.
And you can't,
maybe all of it.
Yeah, yeah. You can't have all of them. Is what you're
saying. See, and so for me, for my interpretation, this was more a commentary on the evolution of virtual reality and when it starts to push boundaries. Where do our boundaries exist?
But I think it's just using that to go the broader picture of like, again the nature of cheating. To me, it was a thing about the nature of cheating, and I guess to a lesser extent, like what is gay.
What is gay?
Margaret, what is ass master? It's a Margaret Cho reference for like 1% of the people listening.
If you're going to do like racist impressions, please do the one about medals of shame.
Gung ho.
Yeah. There's one that's not gonna hold up very well.
Gung ho? Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
I don't think it held up well the first time.
Actually, at some point, we're going to watch the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, the original one with Martin Landau and Jerry Stiller and Walter Matthau.
Really?
Yeah. And wow. there's one angle in particular that does not age well, but is so over the top, it makes me laugh.
Oh, is it where Jerry Lewis is playing the Chinaman?
No.
Oh, okay.
There are Asians involved. Yeah, and I think you're thinking of Mickey Rooney in
maybe
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, God.
I'm sure Jerry Lewis has done it, too.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is a rough week for Jason. I apologize.
Fa-ra-ra-ra-ra. That's a Christmas Story callback.
Of course.
It wasn't so... that was not a rough, because I didn't watch Black Mirror this week, and I actually had an experience that made way up for tickled. So,
okay, well, are we? I guess was it okay? So, Brother Jay, if you were to rate both movies individually, obviously,
tickled was fine. I would give it a B. It wasn't. They didn't answer. It wasn't journalistic enough for me. It didn't answer enough questions. It was entertaining-ish, except that I already, like, I knew going into it exactly where it was going. So it was fine.
It was too real for you, it sounds like.
It wasn't that it was too real. It was like, this isn't, I think it was meant to be a little bit shocking and push the envelope. But for me, this is just like, this was just like 15, 20 years ago. Like, this was just a thing. So it wasn't, it had no value to shock me. So it was just, I think the fact that it couldn't catch me and shock me, I wasn't critical because it didn't give me enough of other story to make me really super interested and invested, if that makes sense.
I've actually had two questions for you. One, did David Ferrier, his name remind you of, I think it was David Ferry, the Joe Pesci character in JFK. Thought about that for a second. And also, do you think David Ferrier wants to grow up and be John Ronson?
Oh.
Because Tickled, to me, it brought up the same themes as, you know, I haven't listened to The Butterfly Effect. But I understand
that haven't?
No, but I understand that the butterfly effect is sort of what? It's like a take on this mom and pop porn operation. And it sort of humanizes everybody involved and makes it seem less evil than maybe one would make you think. But then the thing I did listen to was The Last Days of August, which was the flip side of that same story, where we have horrible things happen and it shines a light on the evils of the industry and how situations that no matter how much you want to control, you know, if you're like a Stormy Daniels type or whatever, the whole thing is still kind of icky. So that's what Tickled kind of reminded me of too. It's like, you can't be involved in any of this without getting some of that on you. No matter how evil David D'Amato ended up being. And in this case, he was, as they, to steal a line from a judge in the Ted Bundy thing, he was extremely wicked and shockingly evil and vile. So that was my thoughts there. Drew, was it worth it? Jason, we never got to, I guess we'll do, Drew was Tickled worth it?
Definitely worth it.
And you should see The Tickle King also on YouTube, the follow-up 20-30 minute thing.
Yes.
If nothing else, just for closure. And even The Tickle King doesn't tell you that he died shortly after that.
No.
Yeah.
Well, was it released before he died?
Yeah, The Tickle King was. Yeah.
Well, that's...
But like months before.
I actually didn't... I found out he died during this podcast recording.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so... Okay, so Jason, back to Striking Vipers. Now, okay, I've already forgotten a half an hour ago when I asked you if you'd seen any more of Black Mirror. You had not?
I have not.
How about Jesse? Is he a Black Mirror fan?
Yes.
Okay, so he's seen a bunch of them.
Yes.
And did he enjoy this more than you did?
Yes.
Okay. So, sorry, back to your judgment. Can you levy your judgment? That's not the right word. Can you...
Render
my verdict?
Yes.
This I would, if I'm grading this on the standard scale, I'm going to give it a D.
Okay, fair enough. Drew, was it worth it?
Yeah, it was worth it. I mean, it was a well-crafted episode of television. Yeah, performances were good. Everybody did a good job. Just the writing needed to be better in the last act. They needed to figure out. What is Striking Vipers?
You don't think Striking Vipers was a big sexual phallus reference?
Oh, yeah. Well, one thing I did really appreciate about that episode that I meant to mention earlier was it's kind of set in the near future, right?
Yes.
And I really appreciated just the subtle little touches they had to show how much technology has advanced. You know, like even before he put on the virtual reality thing on his head, you know, the console game he was playing was slightly more advanced than what they are today. And Carl, there was just a brief shot of this awesome, like, fold-out phone that he had.
Yes.
So, I really appreciated those subtle touches to show, like, how far technology had advanced. They didn't linger on it. They didn't beat you over the head with it like they did with some other stuff.
Drew, had you seen It Follows?
No.
It Follows does this interesting thing where it's sort of, it's a horror movie. They do things to mess with time. Like the cars are kind of old and the buildings are kind of old. So it feels sort of 70s in that aspect of it. But they have interesting technology. Like one of the girls has like an e-reader, basically. Like they throw stuff at you like that to maybe
keep muddy, you disoriented.
Yeah, kind of muddy the waters a little bit. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting choice, but it's someday we'll have to talk about it because I think it's worth talking about. But yeah, I don't know if it was ultimately satisfying. Not like these movies, for sure. So, okay. Well, again, thank you for your indulgence. They're not all winners, people. Sometimes I rush something on the calendar and it is not a hit.
No, it was certainly compelling to talk about.
Yeah, well, I thought it was going to be more compelling, but oh well. I have a whole list of fetish talk to discuss, but I guess maybe we'll go there. So anyway, I'm just kidding. Although it's funny, Jason, when I was it must have been the Fifth Estate where we were talking a little bit about what episodes to do when you're talking about the ASMR episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized only after, as I was editing it, that what you meant is a second ASMR music episode. And I instantly went into, we were going to do an episode in ASMR where we talked into the microphone and rubbed it up against our fleshy parts.
Ew.
Yeah, well, again. So, we all bring our back
to him. I don't like things rubbing against my fleshy parts.
It's not really all that fleshy. Anyway.
Never mind.
Okay. So, and it's not like, it's not rubbing as much as it is a, kind of a grind. Anyway, so, housekeeping. Anybody have any housekeeping?
Housekeeping, I do.
Okay.
Do you, Drew?
I do. Two things. One, I wanted to ask you about George and Reva's 50th anniversary party and what you guys remember about it.
Yes. Okay.
Because I brought this up to Dad because it was his 48th, and we were just talking about how wild it is that it's going to be 50 here right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, just like when we had that party for George and Reva. And I euphemistically reminded him about how grumpy he was about that party. But what I really meant was I remember very clearly that he completely lost his shit when he discovered that we were having the party for them at our house.
Yes.
Is that your guys' memory too?
Oh, yeah. Yes. This was before he broke out of his shell.
Well, my recollection is that decisions were made and he was not consulted.
Absolutely.
And he found out about it later, and then was really upset because he didn't think our house was in good enough shape to host so many people. And I want to say we ended up painting the house.
Oh yeah, inside out.
Yeah. Not a happy painting time.
No, it was a Herculean effort, actually.
Yeah, a lot of anger painting is what I remember.
I think perhaps even furniture was purchased. It was a thing.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay, so I just wanted to verify that I was not crazy.
No.
That was not Dad's memory at all.
No.
Really? Does he remember it being a lovely time?
I think so. He was like, I was grumpy. I was like, yeah, you were pretty fucking grumpy.
Yeah, it was funny because I had asked you guys about doing some episodes that are kind of off our normal topics, and one of them I think we should interview Dad as an expert. But I really think, like, the way in the romantic story in my head, Dad takes a turn in his life. It all starts with wanting to climb a mountain and get into a mine.
Which came first, that or discovering the Ken's Memorial? I think that
before came... that, actually, he discovered that during that process.
Yeah. So I mean, there's a couple steps in this journey.
Oh no, it's complicated and circuitous, and there's some other things involved. But like, that's when he got super healthy and sort of focused on he basically became a different person. He became way more social, less hermity.
Yeah. It's sort of
he came with some people. He became that way,
and it was really the genesis of that was the empty nest, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yes.
So pretty much, his children were ruining his life.
Well, as had been expressed to us very specifically on several occasions. So yes, I got it.
I seem to recall some tension about the Tomko wedding reception being at our house as well.
Tomko wedding reception?
A whole bunch of drunk people.
No, that was all George and Riva's thing.
Was it?
Yeah, altogether? It's all one piece. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah, where you nearly did a citizen's arrest on.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah. Because we were parking at the Mormon church. Jason, I think, was valet parking people's cars. Or maybe, I don't know how it was working. But, you know, they come to drink.
Yes.
And so, you know, they were just maintenance drinking, I'm sure. But they should not have been driving. And it was different times a little bit, but it was still on the edge of, oh yeah, this is not cool at all. Like, there's liability that can attach at this point.
Yeah.
But it was not an argument that you could win as a teenager.
That was the heyday of MAD, right?
Exactly, yeah.
As someone who was deeply involved with the Students Against Drunk Driving in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. So you had a... Yeah, exactly. I forgot all about that.
Yeah. So my advocacy started young.
Yeah.
And then the indignity that I had to pick someone up from their job and bring them back, and he went with me.
Oh, exciting.
And then criticized my driving the entire way.
Oh,
I do believe also that he had a beer with him in the car, which didn't help.
I'm sure.
But it was the 85 prelude.
This was the days where Jason was wound slightly tighter than he is now.
You think?
Oh, come on. We all were.
That's true. Oh, yeah. No, are you kidding? I was the peacemaker. That's what my Al-Anon taught me. Anyway, so...
we all have our roles to play.
We all do, yeah.
I have one other piece of housekeeping.
Okay.
It looks like the lake house is falling through. That's not going to happen.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh.
The appraisal came in low, and the sellers want us to make up the difference in cash, and we are saying no to that.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah, good. Walk away.
Yeah.
That will save me editing.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter that you doxed me.
Hey, I edited all of the GPS coordinates you gave, and...
Yeah, I guess
that's disappointing.
By midnight tonight, in a couple hours, we should know for sure. But we gave them our kind of best and final offer, but I don't think they're going to take it. So.
What was the reason for the low appraisal? Just the general vicinity, or
that's just the way they calculated it out, and it makes sense. This was a question we had very early on in the process with our agent, because the selling price was way higher than the municipal appraisal,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it's expected that the market value is going to be, you know, somewhat higher. This is way higher. And we asked our agent about that. She said, oh, well, you know, I've run comps on properties like this, and this is what we came up with as being market value. We're like, oh, all right. Seems pretty high. Well, the appraiser ran comps too and came in about 20 grand lower.
Oof.
Which feels more right. So we're certainly not motivated to go above that.
Yeah. Why would you? That seems
especially not like foolhardy. Cash out of pocket.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
don't want to start out underwater on this property.
Yeah. At a lake.
Yes.
So, yeah. So we gave them a final offer, but
so is your real estate person going to continue to be a real estate person?
Unknown. She's trying real hard, but But
you don't have a contract with her, right?
No.
She would have a contract with the seller.
Yeah.
That's disappointing.
Funny.
Yeah.
Well,
you could walk away. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was not meant to be. It's not meant to be. I think the sellers are making a hasty and emotional decision. So I'm sure they are. I don't blame them. I'm sure they are very frustrated that they're being told their property isn't worth what they think it should be.
Oh yeah.
But I think they were given some bad advice by their real estate agent.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they were overpromised.
Yeah, and what I gathered was they chose real estate agents by essentially putting them in a bidding war against each other.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, no. So I think this is what you get. So I am worried for them that if they put this back on the market, it's just going to be more headache for them, and it's not ultimately going to end up where they want it anyway.
Well, how would they just? I mean, it has to be really attractive to come out of pocket that much money, right?
Yeah, I think they're talking themselves into they just got a shitty appraiser.
Ah,
and you know, if they get another appraiser, it's going to come in higher.
Or maybe they could just find an all cash buyer or something.
Yeah, they could.
So, I'm slowly packing things up. We will be packed to go hopefully in the next 48 hours. Not the least of which is I will be shipping 4 boxes of car parts tomorrow. So that'll be good. No bumper, clearly, because the bumper's already there. The bumper's there. Did we already discuss this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think so. Yeah.
$160.
$16.
Also, I talked to Mom. I haven't actually had a chance to talk to Dad about it, but has there not been any movement on the car?
No, not a whole lot.
So Dad's like a little frustrated?
Yes.
So.
Yeah, because
I think maybe we talked about this last week too, where it's like, oh yeah, for the amount of money he's paying, he should be on the fucking top of their list.
Well, so here's the thing though. Originally, when they started the project, they told him he wasn't going to have it until at least fall.
Okay.
Like September, October. They warned him. They're like, yeah. They thought that they were going to get ahead, and they were hoping that if they could, they'd have it done to show it this summer at one of their auto shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when they realized that wasn't going to happen, there's no sense to rush it. So I think the dad got excited at the prospect that they might have bumped it up, but then I think that he expected that they would just still keep it in their queue up front when, like, they don't need to, in their opinion. So I understand his disappointment, but he's not going to get it any later than it was promised, I suspect.
When you're almost 100, every heartbeat is a gift.
He's not almost 100. So anyway.
I think he's worried that he's going to get it, like, the day before the first heavy snowfall.
Oh, absolutely. That's that. You might as well just put that on the calendar.
Yeah.
Well, so are these car parts? I mean, these are probably essential car parts anyway, so they can't really finish it without all these stuff, right?
No, the stuff I have is not. I've got like it's like a window trim kit and wiper arms, which are newer than he has, and door handles, which are newer than he has. So it's stuff that he'd like to have them, but they wouldn't stop the car from progressing. It's just a lot of minutiae.
Okay.
So, but it's stuff that's either reproduced to look like the original or is from other Starliners from Stan's supply. So it's kind of a mixture of both things. It's got door handles and then the window handle cranks and stuff like that. So
this isn't going to be like a Concours style It's going to be, it's not going to be true to the minute of production. There's going to be some other parts in it and some maybe newer stuff, or
it'll be pretty close to original.
Okay.
I think he's putting in a, like a Bluetooth radio with just a like facade of being an original type.
Oh yeah. No, they have that kind of stuff. It's pretty cool.
Well, and also he's adding some kind of power steering system, and
well, the engine is already not stock.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Correct. So there, I mean, yes, it will look pretty legit on the outside to original, but it'll be different enough that people will be able to say, yeah, it's close.
What about like seatbelts?
It's not my department.
I got it. I understand.
It has seatbelts, I believe, but I think they would be mostly ineffectual.
Just slap belts?
Yes, that's what
I'm
saying.
There's no shoulder harnesses in the front?
No.
Ah.
I don't believe so.
And maybe nothing in the back?
You'd think there'd be at least something.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, well, maybe.
1961, I don't know. Anyway, I wanted to say that, so we're packed, ready to go, mostly. And then, of course, my roommate's like, I'm going to paint the living room while you're gone. I'm like, oh, really? Fuck. So now I have to like take everything off my bookshelf and find sheets to put over all the stuff in my living room and move my computer and the TV. And it's just going to be a thing. So, all right. So whatever. And then he's like, I'm also going to tear up your bathroom, put new countertop and sink in. I'm like, I don't have, all right. So I'm going to come home. My living room is going to be
amazing.
My living room is going to be like a quarter painted, and my bathroom is not going to have a counter, and the toilet will be in my bedroom.
Hey, we've had that experience before.
I was going to say, I've been there before, yeah. But I do want to say that due to a very generous grant from a very close relative, I was able to watch the entire series Chernobyl. So,
yeah. And what'd you think?
Oh yeah,
it is amazing. It's amazingly well done. It's haunting. The music in itself. I told boyfriend Jesse, it is a horror movie where the monster is the music. It's
how many
truly
episodes is it?
Five.
Oh, that's not bad.
But they're full hour ish episodes.
Some
are a little more, and it's dense, but it is so fantastic. So highly recommend it. I have actually watched, so boyfriend Jesse and I were watching it, but Derek saw one of the episodes. Roommate Derek saw one of the episodes. So I have been, when Jesse's been working nights, he's been watching the episodes, rewatching them with me, because he's like, I have to see them. So I've seen it twice, basically.
Awesome.
Which is a little rough, because one of the episodes, well, a couple episodes are pretty tough to watch.
I haven't gotten near that there yet, but I've heard episode 4 might be one of the most upsetting things in the history of television.
Oh, well.
Can't wait. Well.
No spoilers.
Yeah, I left the room. So,
yeah.
But that bothered me a little. So that was on one spectrum. The other spectrum is just the graphic display of just the radiation damage to people, because it was pretty brutally realistic in a couple instances. It's really well done. And the aesthetic, it looks so much like the pictures that you would see in Chernobyl. So, I highly recommend it. But yeah, it's got some haunting, very haunting things in. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.